It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have a wonderful show today with Jim DeSimone, a wonderful guy. We're going to be talking about overcoming cancer, faith, courage, hope. So many wonderful things that Jim stands for, and it's just really an honor to have him on this morning. Jim, are you with us today?
I am with you, my friend. How are you today?
Good morning, sir. Good morning. I ran into the studio like a lunatic. I was a little late this morning. I was hanging out with my little guy, Alexander. We were at our neighbor's yesterday. Unfortunately, I got hit in the face with the Frisbee, believe it or not. So the little lad got roughed up. But anyway, good morning, sir. So first of all, how are you and the family doing?
We're doing very well. We're doing very well. Everybody is focusing on what we can focus on to stay positive and healthy and just keep pushing forward.
Well, amen to that. Amen. It means so much, Jim, that you were kind enough to join us this morning. You know, each week I bring people on throughout our great community, really throughout the country, and always look for inspirational stories, people that lift up the world and really are great examples of what it's all about, which is just, you know, giving back and making it better for all of us. So for all of the listeners today, tell us a little bit about who you are, little bit about your background.
Okay, fantastic. First of all, I'm a father, husband, brother, cancer survivor, Christian. And I'm a average guy working 70 to 80 hours a week in the automotive business, trying to make a living and trying to do it the right way, trying to do it with faith of Jesus Christ, trying to do it with the love of the family, and trying to make people around me proud, better, healthy, happy, educated. That's pretty much who Jim DeSimone is, I think, today.
Well, you know, it's wonderful, Jim, that, you know, first of all, being a survivor, you know, I love people that really just epitomize strength and courage. And you mentioned, you know, you're a cancer survivor. And, you know, it means so much. You know, each week I bring folks on who candidly, they just open their hearts and they share their stories. And that's really what the Todd Leonard Show is about, Jim, is just people being real, being authentic, just telling it the way it is. And once again, it means so much that you were kind enough to you know, join us this morning. So let's talk about, you know, who you are as a person, though. So I understand in researching, you've been in the automotive industry for a long time. I think you told me in some of the preparation, you've been literally in the automotive industry since you're 15. How the heck did you get involved in the automotive industry?
Oh, well, I guess some would say good luck, some would say bad luck. My family has been in the automotive industry, everyone but my dad. My uncles have all been in the automotive industry, and at 15 years old, I needed a job, and I needed to work on the weekends and after school, so my Uncle Joe ran a car dealership in Ramsey. We grew up in Lodi. He would pick me up in the morning, bright and early, drive me to the dealership, and I would work out in the parking lot, picking up paper, picking up garbage, washing cars, doing all the little things that no one pays attention to but needs to keep a business running, cleaning bathrooms, whatever it took. And believe it or not, I liked it. And I liked the guys, and I liked the fact that you could help people in a different way, way that people maybe weren't used to. So my uncle gave me an opportunity to learn the different departments. And I started washing cars and cleaning them and detailing, which is tougher than people think. And then I learned to be a mechanic. Not a very good one, but I was a mechanic. And I moved through each department. And I worked in every department in an automotive dealer that you could work in. And I learned every person's job over the years. And I held my first management job. I ran Toyota of Morristown, believe it or not, when I was 21 years old. It was a very, very big job for me at the time. I worked 7 days a week in order to be able to learn and prove to everybody I could do it. And I did it. And I just didn't take no from there. I moved up the ladder. and kept moving forward, kept trying to take people with me from that point forward. I have some of the same guys I worked with at Toyota Morristown 25, 28 years ago, still with me today.
Wow, that's a lot of, you know, you were mentioning detailing a car. My car needs a good one, I'll be honest. I know it's hard work.
I know a good detailer for you.
Yeah, right. We'll have to talk to you after the show, Jim. I think it should be, I should be coming over to your place and detailing your car since I dragged you probably out of bed to join us. So you're married. You're blessed with some wonderful kids, right?
Yes, I am. I married Madeline Francis Curcio when I was 22 years old. We met at Toyota of Morristown, believe it or not. I know I can't say this now because I would get in trouble, but back then she worked for me. And I hired her and I fell in love with her and we got married and we had son Anthony. Probably a year after that. Anthony's going to be 29 years old this year. And then Marissa followed 4 or 5 years after Anthony. So we had a nice little one boy, one girl family, and we put it all together for the past 30 years. We've been working hard, which it's a lot of hard work to stay married, stay focused, and keep your family together. And we've been pushing together as a unit.
Amen to that. And I know when we were talking, Jim, in advance of the show, I could hear it in your voice how proud you are of your kids and your wife and how devoted and how wonderful they've been, to you and everything you've gone through in your life's journey. I also know that in speaking with you, you're a big sports fan. I mean, the Cowboys. And I was thinking, like, you know, I grew up in New Jersey, and I know you said I think you grew up in Lodi. And how'd you get involved with the Cowboys, though, the boys?
You know, that's a question everyone asks me every time. So it was pretty simple, right? I grew up, I was born in 1968, grew up in a very, very Italian town of Lodi, New Jersey. Honestly and truly, I didn't know there were other people than Italians in Lodi. That's what it was. My friends would come over to my backyard, and we would play football. So in the early to mid-70s, who were the great football teams? There were the Oakland Raiders, there were the Dallas Cowboys, there were the Pittsburgh Steelers. And each friend would pick someone. And I had the better arm at the time, so I wanted to be the quarterback. And being the quarterback, you had to be Roger Staubach. Who else were you going to be? So Roger Staubach became my hero, and a good one to boot at that after the years. And I became a Dallas Cowboy fan. And once I am loyal to something, I stick with it. I've watched every Thanksgiving Day game. I've probably missed 2 or 3 downs in 20-plus years. And the Cowboys are my love through and through. And it's what I support, my Dallas Cowboys.
Nothing wrong with that. And Roger Staubach, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and obviously a great leader on and off the field. So I don't think you go wrong with Roger Staubach. And certainly, you know, the Cowboys have a loyal following. So, Jim, I want to talk about something serious. I just wanted the listeners to get a little feel of who you are and a little bit of your background, because I think that's really informative for all of us. Now, I understand, unfortunately, in 2016, you got a diagnosis that everyone would dread and obviously everybody hates the word cancer. Cancer's touched my life in way too many ways, and unfortunately I lost my beloved parents, and I miss them dearly every day, and so many other people in my life has been touched by cancer. And when I heard you were coming on and we're going to talk about cancer and surviving and courage and strength, I recently had a great friend of mine, Linda Graziano from Springfield, and we talked about Canvas of Hope and picking yourself up off the canvas. Canvas of life, that was. And I wanted to talk with you, Jim. So in 2016, you got the diagnosis of cancer. And what type of cancer did you hear, unfortunately, you had?
First, they didn't know it was cancer. And they went in and they did some testing. And they found out that I had colon cancer. And the truth of the matter is, initially, I thought I was having chest pains, but it turned out that I was 2 pints low on blood, and I was bleeding internally pretty badly. And they told me that I would go into an immediate organ failure if I didn't get dealt with immediately. When they say immediately, I drove from work to the hospital, where I stayed at that point. I was diagnosed with colon cancer, and initially, that first word you hear, oh, my God, I have cancer, everybody thinks they're going to die, you know, because it's just such a bad word to hear. But my family came in, and we were tough, and we prayed, and we believed that I was too strong to get taken down so easily. They did the testing, and they found that I had advanced colon cancer, which is a tough thing because colon cancer is one of the only cancers that you could get and never, ever see that you're sick. A lot of people find out they have colon cancer and then they die. And it's shocking that people don't even know that because by the time you find out you have it, it's generally just too late. And that's a big deal in today's world. You need to go out and you need to get checked. And I'm probably the worst for that, believe it or not. But you need to humble yourself. You need to go to the doctor and you need to get checked, if not for yourself, but for your family. So we found out that I had colon cancer. And then I was on my way back to work after a surgery. And they told me, don't worry. We think we got it all. You should be good to go. Okay, fantastic. That's what I want to hear. On my way to work, they tell me, Jim, we have bad news. The cancer moved to your liver. So it metastasized into your liver. We went from stage 1 or 2 cancer, you have stage 4. And you have terminal cancer because things are so bad in the liver right now that we don't think that you're going to be able to survive a surgery. We don't think that you're going to be able to make it. And they gave me an 11% chance to live that first year. So at that point, I had to dig in. Right? I had to dig in. I had to figure out what we were going to do. I had to figure out which way we were going to go as far as health and healing. I saw some local doctors, some local hospitals, and my family convinced me to go to Sloan Kettering in New York City and see a doctor with an angelic name, Dr. D'Angelica. Dr. D'Angelica sat across from me. He's maybe 3 or 4 years younger than I am, head of surgery. He looked at me and he said, I'm going to save your life. And he did.
So if I may, Jim, so when you got the diagnosis in 2016, and from what I understand, you were a workaholic in that period of time, right before the diagnosis. And for the listeners, when I say workaholic, how many hours were you putting in the automotive industry?
6 days a week, 80 hours a week at least, sometimes more.
Right, and when you heard the word cancer and you first heard you had colon cancer, and just to digress, for all the listeners, everybody, the men especially, certainly, they got to go for the screenings, and certainly it's unpleasant, but it needs to be done. And there's other tests they can do to screen the colon, but it's clearly critical for everyone to go for the periodic exams. And one of the reasons why, Jim, you're coming on today, hopefully to educate the public, too, in terms of that. I think that's vitally important. So you get the diagnosis, and when you heard the words that you had colon cancer first, did you think, oh my God, this is it, or did you think, oh my, I think we can beat this together? I mean, what was the first reaction?
My first reaction for me, Jim DeSimone, my first reaction is to take in the words that someone's saying, right? Lose all the color in my face, and then take a deep breath. And I took a deep breath, and I said, I can beat it. But my first reaction wasn't for me. It was for my wife, my children, my mom and dad, my sister and brother. It was for them. And I felt like, and I feel this way till today, I don't fight necessarily for Jim DeSimone every day. I fight for my people that I love. I fight for the people that I care about. And I'm trying to prove to them and the people around me that you can beat anything that's put in front of you. And I don't want to beat the drum too much, but if you have faith and you have love, you can beat anything. And you can try. And you just got to get out of bed and keep trying. And that's what I did. When I heard it, I took a deep breath and I said, okay, now let's figure out how to beat it. I never once said I was going to die from cancer.
So, Jim, you know, this show, the Todd Leonard Show, you can beat the drum of faith and love. That's what the show is all about, is lifting up and raising awareness and raising hope. I mean, I think that's hopefully what the listeners have been enjoying. In terms of, so you're battling colon cancer, and then you find out oh my God, it metastasized to my liver. And you're thinking at that point, what? I mean, what's going through Jim DeSimone's mind when you're hearing it's in the liver now? I mean, well, what's that? I know it's hard to talk about. What's that like?
Well, it's confusing. It's confusing because what does it mean? You know, the first thing you do is you go to Google, right? WebMD. You go to the internet, and the internet is bad. And the doctor told me, he said, if you want to survive, stay off the internet. Okay? You don't want to read what's out there because the good stories aren't out there. It's just the negative. It's just the dark. Okay? You know, evil, the negative wants you to succumb to it. You need to stay positive and focused. And my doctor pointed me in a direction and he told me, look, you're going to have to go through so many more rounds of chemo and then we're going to stop. And you're going to take a month and a half or 2 months off of chemo so that we can get your body strong again. And then we're going to do the biggest surgery of your life. You know, we're going to cut you all the way up the front and we're going to go in and we're going to do some things. We're going to work on your colon. We're going to take your liver out and we're going to, they cut it. They cut the tumors out and then they burn the lesions. This way the cancer wouldn't grow back. And then they put a pump. A Codman liver pump, which Sloan Kettering's one of the only people in the world who do this. They put a pump in where I could get chemo in my arm, but also directly injected into the pump. And that totally eliminated the cancer in my colon, totally eliminated the cancer in my liver. It was tough. It was hard. It was not an easy thing, but it knocked it out of the park. And unfortunately, cancer has grown back. And cancer is something I still battle today. I say I'm a survivor because I survive every day, but I do still have cancer. It moved to my lung. It's not in a place where it hurts me every day. It's not in a place where it causes me a problem, but it's there. It reminds me that there's still darkness and evil out there. And again, you get out of bed and you fight. That's what you do. But the part of my story I want to share with you right now, if it's okay.
Yeah, please. I mean, please do.
Early in 2017, before my surgery at Sloan Kettering Hospital, my wife asked me to go to Blairstown with her and see a family friend that she's known for years. It was her chiropractor. It was her friend. It was a healer that she believed in and that she became family with, you know, for no uncertain terms. And it was Dr. Giacobbe and his wife, Maria. And they were having a prayer service at their house on this Saturday. And I gave every excuse. I work Saturday. Saturday's a busy day. You know, I can't get away. We need to sell a car. And she's like, please, just come with me. You leave work an hour early. We need to go see the Giacobbes. We need to sit with them a little while and just hear what they have to say, Jim. So I did. And in doing that, my wife wanted to get baptized. And my dad and my mom are devout Catholics. They don't believe in a second baptism. So that's how I was brought up. One baptism, one time. And after listening to them for about 45 minutes pray and talk, and just a brotherhood that they had, I said, you know what? I'm in. I want to do this. And I got in the pool, and about a dozen people who I didn't know prayed over me. And I felt their love and their compassion. And I went under the water. And when I came back up, I knew at that point I was fighting something bigger than cancer. But I wouldn't let it win because Jesus Christ was on my side. And I was going to win the battle that I needed to win. And from that moment on, if I had determination, I had double determination. I had Super Bowl determination. And I felt Jesus come into my body, into my soul. I began to share my thoughts with other people. I began to start a little ministry on the internet where we text every morning a prayer, just something positive. And I tried to become a teacher instead of a manager. And it changed my life. That moment in time changed my life.
So Jim, one of the things that is wonderful, and God bless you, and I pray that, you know, you keep on battling and winning because you're a winner in life. One of the things that I like to explore is faith and hope and determination and inspiration for the folks. And I mean this sincerely. It means so much that you're sharing this story, because sadly cancer touches so many people and there's so many ways people react to it. And there's no right or wrong. People just react the way they do. That's just the way they're built, and I totally get it. I remember my late dad, God rest him. He lived in so much hope. He had pancreatic cancer, and sadly he was gone in 5.5 months. But his courage and determination, we lost him January 31st, 2009. But I remember his courage and the hope he gave us. And I love people that live in hope rather than despair, because, you know, once again, I mean, you got to lift up and help others along the way. And I just remember it like it was yesterday. We used to go to the Carol Simon Center, and once a month on a Thursday, we'd all get together with the pancreatic cancer, or, you know, people battling it, those battling it and their caregivers. And I remember just the courage, the strength, the determination. And it was inspirational, and I try to live the best life I can to lift people up. You talked about reaching out to folks and ministering. What's that like to start the day? And I don't care what religion you have. It's good to believe in God and pray for whatever you're praying for. You know, I think it's important, the power of prayer and miracles. I think that's so important. Walk us through, like, give us a little taste of the daily inspirational quote. Because for those folks waking up Sunday morning, whatever they're up to, it's always good to start the day on a positive note. Why don't you give us a little taste of what we're talking about there, Jim?
Absolutely. So I have a small group of gentlemen and ladies, and it started off with two or three, and then other people heard about it, and then we grew as many as 20, and now we're down to about 15 who take it seriously. What we do is we share a text message, and the text message is generally a proverb, a quote from the Bible, a psalm, something 2, 3, 4 lines, nothing out of hand, always positive, always about how to start your day and bring joy and laughter and love to other people. And then other people, right after that, they follow with a simple amen or nothing at all. There's people that I don't hear from that are in the group for 2 months, and yet I know they're looking at it, I know they're getting it, and then at the end of 2 months, something happens in their life and say, hey, Jim, you know, my wife is pregnant. Can the group say a quick prayer for my wife and the baby? My aunt Mildred is not feeling well. Can the group pray? So I know they've been listening for 2 months. They're still there. And to me, that means the world, because they're finding that little bit of positive to start their day and that little bit of brotherhood and Christianity and love in Jesus that is coming forward. And it doesn't have to be in a church. It doesn't have to be so structured. It could just be, hey, the two of us get together, say something positive, and make it feel good.
Yeah, so Jim, you know, I love the idea of starting the day, like I said, on a positive note, and that's why I love doing this show. It's just a good way for me to start out my Sunday morning. I get up early, I get my workout in, and then bam, I run like a lunatic down here, and I do the show. And I love the fact that people are actually reaching out and saying, I love your show. I had a woman call me, I was surprised, at my law firm, and she's like, you know, I love tuning in. And I'm like, wow, actually people are listening, so God bless the listeners.
That's great.
And no, but it felt really good, since I'm hoping the listeners really have been enjoying the ride. If people wanted to keep in contact with you, Jim, and start that day with that positive note, that inspirational psalm, how would they reach out to you?
Well, I keep it very personal and very simple. So if they wanted to reach out to me, and if that was something that someone wanted to be involved in, I would be more than happy to include them in our personal ministry of faith. And it's easy. You can go to my email. And you can send me an email, put your phone number in there, and say, Jim, please include me. And you'll get a text message from the group. You'll see 15, 16, 17 people that you don't know that all share the same love and the same hope. And you'll be included in that text message until you ask me to stop. I believe you have my email address. My email address is very simple. If you want, we could share it later.
Yeah, please. If you don't, I mean, look, I don't want to get you bombarded with our listeners, but I love the message of love and hope and starting the day with something really inspirational. So if you don't mind, I don't want to put you on the spot.
No,
if you wanted to share your email, that would be wonderful for the listeners.
Absolutely. Before I share the email, I want to share one thing.
Sure.
This isn't, I am a Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ. But I want you to know, I don't care what your religious beliefs are. I don't care if you have any religious beliefs. I'm not here to hurt anyone. I'm not here to be negative towards someone else. You and I shared that you're Jewish. And you know what? Excellent. But we're having a great conversation. If you're Muslim, we're having a great conversation if you're listening. That's all I care about. So if you want to send me that email, I'm happy to include you. It's J, as in my name, Jim, J-I-M, A as in apple, D as in Y, D as in David, Y as in yellow, JimMaddy@yahoo.com. Very, very simple. It's my personal email. I'm more than happy to reach out and share with anyone.
That's wonderful, Jim. And that's really what it's about, too, is sharing. You know, my little boys, I'm blessed with two little guys, and they always say, and I really love it, you know, sharing is caring. And I know that sounds a little pithy and just like, you know, a little bit of a phrase, but if you really break it down, what's more important than sharing, right? And it really shows that you do care. You know,
in today's world, that's what it's about, right?
We need more of that, Lord knows, and with all the divisiveness and the lack of unity and the lack of faith and hope. I mean, I really do hope the country comes together and enough of this acrimony. It certainly breaks my heart that we just can't get along and really lift the message up in a more powerful, constructive way instead of breaking everyone down. Let's lift everyone up. I mean, I think it's about time. Enough of this acrimony and fighting with each other. So listen, Jim, we're going to take a very short break. We're going to be back in 30 seconds with this very powerful show.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So, Jim, you know, you talked about something about religion, and I, from my view, and it sounds like yours too, it doesn't matter what religion you believe in, but it's important to believe and important to have hope. Now, you've been on a journey, and you've shared a lot of details with us, and it means so much for everyone, I think, for you to be so open and honest. How important would you say, Jim, in your life, how it kind of helps you get through the day, to have faith, to have hope? What's the meaning behind that as you get through each day?
Well, that's a big one, because without faith and without hope, what do you have? You have negativity and you have darkness. And faith and hope are what get me out of bed in the morning. If I did not have faith in the fact that I could put my feet on the ground and stand up, I wouldn't get up. When those people who are listening have been through chemotherapy and they've had a major surgery and your body just can't take any more, what gets you out of bed is faith and hope. You have faith that the Lord Jesus Christ is following a plan that you may not know, but you're going to do your best to figure out, and hope that you have the love and family and trust that you're doing the right thing and that you're moving forward. That's so much of what it's about. You have to just go on that journey and take the step.
You know, it's so important, you know, Jim, to really talk about this in a little bit more detail, because people do go through so much adversity. Now, we're talking, you know, cancer. I mean, you know, what's more serious than that? But people just go through obstacles in life, challenges. They may have a son or daughter or someone they care about that's kind of on the wrong path in life. They might lose a job. They may have tremendous financial stress, whatever it might be. There's challenges, there's adversity, but faith and hope, as you just touched on, really gives us the inspiration to know we're going to be able to get through this, you know, and I think people are a lot more resilient than they think they are, but they got to stick with it. They have to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Now, you're blessed with a loving wife and kids. Talk about that family dynamic, you know, about how important that is in your life.
The family dynamic, you see, this is where I might get emotional and lose my wonderful radio voice, okay?
You do have but a nice, Jim, you have a nice, you know, a little better than mine, actually. Carry on.
Thank you. The family dynamic is what's important, right? I grew up in a loving and caring family. You know, if it was Leave It to Beaver, it was Leave It to Beaver, you know, with a couple of Italian wooden spoons across your butt. But it was a normal American family, and I love that, and I cherish that, and I tried to bring that forward to my family. But again, are there ups and downs? Yeah, there's ups and downs. You know, there's the time, you know, your son doesn't want to finish college, and you need to make a career choice together and try and figure out family. There's times where things are difficult when one of your children gets sick and you question everything. To me, that's bringing the family together and the love of your wife, your son and daughter, that's what puts it all together. You know, one of the things that I shared with you is cancer is tough on the person who gets it, but it literally rips your family apart. You have an expiration date when you hear the word cancer, right? If you hear, oh, Joey got into a car accident, that's horrible. Joey couldn't help getting into a car accident. But when you get cancer, someone gives you odds on survival. Someone gives you a day that you probably won't be here anymore. That's where you need to find your love, your family. You need to find that all-powerful being. For me, it's Jesus Christ. You need to, because there's no other way to get through the day. You got to have something bigger to believe in. It has to be there. And for my family, letting them know each obstacle was out there was devastating. Watching my daughter cry, my wife, my son, break down into tears, that's something that you can't get back. You never, ever want to see that. And to the people who are listening who felt that, they know. Watching your mom cry, that's not something where you want to be. So you have to be strong. If you succumb to it, then they're going to cry all the time, and they're going to be miserable. But if you step forward and step up to the plate, you can show them that you can beat it, and you can bring your family together even stronger. And I believe that's what I've done. I believe my family's stronger. One of the things that you and I talked about was while I was at Sloan Kettering, I was getting chemotherapy in the chair, and my daughter didn't know what she wanted to do with her life. She got out of high school. She went to college a semester, and she was just confused. She didn't know what to do. She sat there and watched those nurses, and she said, "Dad, I know what I want to do. I want to help people. I want to work at Sloan Kettering. I want to help people who are in need of help." And what did she do? She doesn't work at Sloan Kettering, but she went back to school. She got her certificates. She works at a great medical office in Morristown, and she's moving her career every day forward, helping people. And as a dad, how could that make you prouder? My son works with me every day in the car business. It's a tough business. It's a very tough business. And I did for him what my Uncle Joe did for me. He started in the beginning. He started cleaning toilets and washing cars. He became a salesperson. Now he's an assistant service manager at Nissan of Stanhope. And he's making a career for himself, and he's doing very well.
This is wonderful, Jim. You know, to talk about how your daughter Marissa and your whole family's pulled together, because you really do really hit it right on the head. Is when someone is diagnosed, it's not just that person; it's the entire family, all the friends, everybody that cares and loves you, are impacted. And what I think though you talked about, Jim, is how you're living your life with so much courage and strength, and your ability to lift up others. Despite this adversity, do you ever reflect on it, on where you think you got that moxie, that toughness? I know you said you're born and raised in Lodi, and for the listeners, I mean, obviously, you know, strong neighborhood in Lodi, really throughout our country, but I mean, there's a lot of great people in Lodi. Where do you think you got it from, that willingness just to say, hey, listen, I'm fighting this thing. I'm not a quitter. I'm a winner. Where do you think you got it from?
I got it from my mom and dad. I definitely, definitely got that from my mom and dad. My mom has had adversity her whole life. She came here to the United States 15 years old without her family. You know, she went to school in Patterson, and she didn't know anyone. She didn't even speak English. You know, my dad, on the other hand, grew up in a big, loving, happy family in Lodi. And they had different reasons to fight and move forward. And they came together as a family. And I watched my dad work and work and work to put food on the table. And I watched my mom raise myself, my brother and sister, you know, by herself a lot of times because my dad was working. And I learned to just keep fighting. You know, when I played baseball as a kid, it was, you know, don't stop at first, go to second. You can make it to second. And what's that about? That's about fighting. That's just about keep going. Make the practice, do what you need to do, work hard, and it'll pay off. And I believe it will. And that's what I do. You know, again, when you asked me to write some things down, I said I quoted, you know, another famous Italian that I believe in. And one of the things that I truly, truly believe, you know, puts it all in a capsule for you is Rocky Balboa, right? Rocky Balboa, what did he say? He said, one step, one punch, one round. You can't go right to the end. You have to take that first step, you have to throw that first punch, and you have to make the first round. And if you can do that, then you can take your second step, your second punch, and your second round. You're going to get hit, Todd, but are you going to get back up?
Amen to that. You know, the Rocky, so many great movies. But what's really undervalued about Sylvester Stallone is his brilliance in the way he was able to tell stories about life. For folks that really do listen to the dialogue, it's pretty awesome and pretty amazing. And it's downright inspirational. I mean, who doesn't like, you know, the Rocky movies, you know, in terms of his grit and determination? But there's so many wonderful life lessons. I think that's why it's resonated over the many years. I've never had the privilege of meeting Sly Stallone. Love to meet him one day, but I just love the stories and how it really is inspirational. And about life too, though, right? In terms of real life, is never quit, never give up, just keep on going, keep on punching. You never know. You're never really out. And, you know, if you recall just not that many minutes ago, I mentioned Linda Graziano, the canvas of hope. It's just getting up off the canvas, because we all do get knocked down. We get clobbered.
Yes, we do.
Usually, you know what's the weird thing about life, Jim, as I've seen it? In my 56 years living on this great world, great planet, is you always get clobbered from behind. You never really see it coming. That's why you get clobbered, right? Because your hands aren't really up at the time when you get hit from behind. And I know with the cancer diagnosis for my loved ones, that's certainly how I felt. Talk about getting hit by a 2x4. So let's talk, Jim, now, if I may, about... You're lifting yourself up, and you still work so hard at the Nissan dealership, you know. Why? Why do you still work so hard? I'm just curious about that.
Okay, that's a great question. I'm going to sum it up for you, okay? And I think that this is the best that I could do, and I'm going to go backwards one second. The reason that I work so hard is I believe in the people around me, and I believe that in order for people to succeed, they have to have someone they believe in and a quality leader, not a manager, a quality leader. So what I try to do is I try to coach my people. I coached Little League Baseball. I had great coaches around me who inspired me, and I wanted to be able to coach other boys and girls and teach them some of the lessons that I've learned in life. So I've taken that to the car dealership. And if you ask me, hey, Jim, you know, what makes you different than Joe Schmo? Well, what makes me different is I'm going to coach my employees. I'm going to coach them together as teammates. And we're going to be better people. And because we're better people, we're going to do better business. And because of that, because of leading by example, I feel that if I am not at the dealership, then how can I expect someone else to be at the dealership? If I don't work 4th of July, how can I ask my people to work 4th of July? And I truly believe that. I don't believe because you're, you know, the next guy from the top that you should have more days off or more hours off. I feel that you should lead by example. and show, you know, everyone else with you, this is why we're doing it. This is what we're doing. We have a common goal. Let's do it together. That's why I put the hours in that I do. And I feel that it motivates me to keep fighting.
No, what, you know, we were talking, you know, obviously I try to be prepared each week as best I can. And we were talking, Jim, you know, before the show about, my late dad. He loved to work and you love to work and that work ethic and just that's part of who you are. And that kind of keeps you going. And that's part of just, you know, your DNA. You know, we're living in a time, Jim, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because we're in like the twilight zone that just will not end with COVID-19 and the adversity we're all kind of feeling, all that tension and anxiety. What are your thoughts about, like, you know, life's lessons, what you're battling, and for all of us, you know, dealing with COVID-19 and the practicalities of, there's a lot of adversity out there. You know, people are social distancing, the business world's evolving, just everything is different now. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a tough one, and it's constantly evolving, right? I mean, 2020 has rocked the entire world. 2020 is going to be one that goes down in history, you know, for multiple reasons. People together, people apart, the disease, what's happening, what's not happening. It's so, so tough. The thing that I realized when we first heard what happened, my first thought was, wow, they could never shut the country down. This is America. How do they do that? And they shut the country down. And what we did is my wife said, well, you know, you're going to work? I said, yeah, we have a business to run. We're essential employees. People don't necessarily consider us that until your car doesn't start. When your car doesn't start and we become essential, then we become important. So we went to work, myself, my son, a small group of people in the service department, a small group of people in the sales department who were dedicated. We went in every day. And what did we do? We hung plexiglass shields. We wore face masks. In the beginning, we wore gloves. We had the place bombed over and over again to kill any disease. We answered phone calls. We answered emails. We made people realize that we're here for them, and if they need us, we would help them. I had a woman, believe it or not, on a Sunday morning reached out to our answering service, and you could tell that she was an elderly woman and she was scared. And she said, it's Sunday morning, my car's stuck at my mailbox. It's a Nissan. I don't know what to do. You know what? Sunday morning, COVID, cancer, I shouldn't be out. I got dressed to go help that woman because that's what people do. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what we're supposed to do in order to have that faith, that love, that hope. And it's just a simple gesture to make somebody else feel better. So you put on your mask, even though you don't want to. You clean your desk area. You talk to customers, and you help them through their problems. That's what we get paid to do. That's what we love to do. Now you introduce a whole nother situation, right? You introduce a lot of racial tension into our local communities and our lives. So what I did to learn is I talked to young people. I talk to people who grew up different than you and I. I talk to people who maybe understand things that I didn't understand. And of all races, colors, creeds, backgrounds. And I'm trying to understand what I don't know so that I could help my employees, my customers, my friends, my loved ones grow and become better people under Jesus Christ. I'm learning. I'm learning every day. And I'm keeping my mind open to trying.
Yeah, that's one. I mean, that's the, I think, certainly the right philosophy is have an open mind. Listen to people. We are in 2020. It's certainly been a bizarre time for all of us. I mean, as you highlighted, between COVID-19, the economy, shutting the whole market down, everything down, the racial tension, the anti-police movement, which I think is, you know, there needs to be reform. But, I mean, the police do so many wonderful things. It just, everybody's at each other's throat. And we got an election coming up. I mean, it's certainly been a whirlwind, but I certainly pray we all do come together and we even come out stronger, because I do believe through all this adversity, because we're the greatest country, in my humble opinion, we will come out stronger, but certainly it's been a very challenging time. So, Jim, I want to touch again about, you know, how you've been living for over 4 years battling. And keep on going, you know, like the Energizer Bunny. Nothing's going to stop Jim DeSimone. Some of the life lessons you can kind of share with us in terms of just how this has changed you, and maybe some advice for the listeners, and just in terms of how they can deal with these adversities.
Sure. Now, I mean, we talked about how much I work, right? And my kids will tell you that I work too much. My wife will tell you I work too much. My friends who know me will tell you I work too much. But to Jim DeSimone, you deal with adversity by going forward. And in order to go forward, you have to keep things the same in your life to a certain degree. You have to be able to get up every morning, and you have to be able to have that consistency. So whether I'm sick or whether I'm not, I get up the same time every day. That's why I didn't have trouble getting up for your show this morning. I get up and I do my thing. I pray to God. I move forward. I check out what's going on in our world. And then I go to work and I try to enlighten the people around me who are at the dealership, who are coming into the dealership. And I try to show them that we can all be the best people that we can be. And as far as I'm concerned, the life lesson I learned is you got to love your neighbor. You have to love the people who are looking back at you. And I know right now when someone's looking back at you with a mask, you know, it makes it a little difficult, but you have to let them feel the love that you have. And again, my love comes from Jesus Christ and from my family. And I believe that if you can share that feeling, you don't need to preach it. You need to let people see it in your eyes. You need to let people see it in your actions. You know, you talk about on your show some people who do some wonderful things with, you know, missionaries and food banks. And those are amazing things that people need to keep doing, because right now we need that more than ever, right? In my business, a lot of times it's about advertising those things. I don't believe in that. I believe you pick a cause and you stick to it. You know, Wounded Warrior Project. Who's more important than a wounded warrior? I mean, you have an 18, a 21-year-old, a 30-year-old give up their life to go fight for our families. We have to back those people. So we back the Wounded Warrior Project. You know, a puppy that's in need of help. Totally different. But we back that because we try to help. Your radio station absolutely jumps in and gets behind that. And we help them. We help them do that. Why? Because it's important. To the puppy, yes. But you know who else it's important to? The person who's holding that puppy. That changes their life. And you need to be able to put a positive on things. And that's some of the things you put positives on. You know, the American Heart Association we've backed and we've done great things with. We want to just keep picking causes that we believe in, that my employees believe in, not just me. And we put our heart and our soul in those causes, and we move forward to show the community that we're a community.
Yeah, I mean, that's something too, Jim, that you just touched on just at the end of that, which is so important, what you just said, is the idea of community and being together and being part of it and giving back and helping others in need, not for the accolades, just because it's the right thing, but stay with it. You know, each week I bring people on. These are just incredible people. And I think the common denominator is there's a love to help. They want to be good people, and they feel so grateful in their hearts, and they want to give back. And whatever it is, you know, whatever turns you on, I've had so many different types of people on here, and you name it, they've been involved in it. And the fascinating thing is there's still that common bond there, is they found a purpose, and they just do it, and they stick with it. And I think that's important, the consistency. Each day, Jim, tell us about how you feel. I know, I'm just curious because I wake up pretty early on Sundays, too. What time do you wake up every day?
Well, Jim DeSimone used to wake up at about 5:30 every morning. But now that Jim's up, gone over the 50 threshold, Jim's pushing 5:30, 6 o'clock every day.
Every morning.
Try to get up out of day. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, that's good. You stay well, like a farmer almost. Each day, when you wake up, are you living for tomorrow, or are you living for today?
That's a great question. I spent my 20s, my 30s, and some of my 40s living for tomorrow. I lived for tomorrow. And My wife would tell me, we don't have tomorrow, we have today. And you need to be in the moment, Jim. You need to be in the moment. I couldn't be in the moment because the car business has you always planning for the next day, the next month, the next quarter. And that's what I knew. So that's what I did. And now I don't see it that way. Now I see, what can I do to change today? Tomorrow's not given to me. Tomorrow's not really given to any of us, right? So I need to believe in today. So I leave my home with a smile on my face, whether I feel good or I feel terrible. But if I can leave with a smile on my face, hope in my heart, Jesus in my head, you know, love and laughter, then I can make today whatever I want to make today. And I know that sounds so corny, but that's the reality. You control it. You control your day. Don't let somebody else control it for you.
You know, I don't think it's corny at all, Jim. I think that you're really onto something, which is start the day out with a smile. Even if you're tired, even if you're going to have a tough day in front of you, it's all about the attitude. It's about how you go through the day. If you go into work with a negative attitude, or you're going to talk to your spouse or whoever, and you're not in a great disposition, a bad mood, that's not the way to enter anything. You just got to stay upbeat and happy. And each day, I think it's important to treat it like a masterpiece, like, because you're blessed to have that day in front of you. You know, so many people, I know a lot of extraordinarily successful people, but not all of them take a step back and say, you know, like, I know this is a cliche, but smell the roses today. Don't worry about tomorrow. Enjoy the day. Enjoy what you have in front of you. But life is a journey. There's no question about it. You touched a little bit about your son, Anthony, and how he's in the automotive industry now. And I go back to my late dad, and one of the beautiful things about the show, I never thought I would be able to talk so much about my late parents who have meant the world to me, and hopefully I make them proud of everything I do. And I'm not perfect. If I make a mistake, I'd certainly try to own up to it. But the idea of you're carrying on that legacy to impart it in your kids and with your son, and he's watching you. Because I worked every day with my late dad. My dad was an extraordinary trial lawyer, but an even better dad. And I remember all the life lessons I learned from my dad about it. I just worked his fanny off, treated everyone unbelievably well. It was just, to this very day, when I have the great honor of having people talk about my late dad, it's because of the feelings he left those people with about how he treated them, how much respect and admiration he had for people, and they felt the same way. One of my late dad's friends, Herbie Trinkler, who listens to the show, would be able to echo that. My dad left people with that feeling he cared so much about him. What's it like to leave that legacy, to give your son that legacy of who you are?
I think it's tremendously important. You know, my son never thought he would end up in the car business. He loved cars because he grew up around them, but that's not what he wanted to do. And it started out as a part-time job in the summer, right? Working through high school, working through college, part-time. This is what I'm going to do. And then it kind of evolved into something different. And he watches me, and he hopefully learns the lessons that I want him to learn. And then we talk about it at times. We try not to talk about work at home because I need to have my son at home, not my employee. But we talk about things that maybe we would have never have talked about in this fashion. You know, at 28, 29 years old, his focus is growing and making money, right? His focus is, you know, I want a house, I want this, I want that, right? All the things that he should want, and that's great. But I want him to see that sometimes it's okay to step over a nickel and not pick it up, because helping that person will reward you emotionally, mentally, faithfully. It'll pay rewards that you can't even count on now. And I think he's starting to see that when I take care of someone, he'll look at me and say, Dad, you know, that person was nothing but terrible to you. They yelled at you, they screamed at you, you know, they lied to you, whatever the case may be, an employee sometimes or a customer, and you went out of your way to help them. Why'd you do that? Because it was the right thing to do. Plain and simple, Anthony, just do the right thing. If you do the right thing, it will reward you. You'll sleep at night. It'll reward your family, and you'll reap benefits from it that are endless. Just do the right thing. And I hope in the car business, there's been a lot of people that love Jim DeSimone, and there's a lot of people who don't like Jim DeSimone. The people who love Jim DeSimone understand that I pushed them as hard as I could push them so that they can be everything I saw that they could be. And the people who don't like me are the people who didn't want to be pushed, who are happy being okay. And I hope there's a lot more of the love Jim DeSimone and understand that I was there for them to teach, to learn, and to try and take them to the next level. And I think as a legacy, for my son to have that would mean the world to me. And for people to say, hey, your dad taught me a lot, that would go so far for me. It's gone for you and your dad.
Yeah. Jim, I think you're teaching a lot of people. What you've been doing is wonderful. The way you live your life, and I think it's so inspirational. But before we conclude this so important, very powerful, very emotional segment with you, Jim, you talked about Sloan Kettering, which is one of the most wonderful and gifted hospitals really in the world. But what you talked about, how your doctor gave you hope, because I know how important hope is, especially when you're dealing with something. Is there anything that you wanted to sum up for your feelings about Sloan Kettering and about how they've been so inspirational and so involved in your life these last 4 years?
I would love to. Memorial Sloan Kettering is an amazing, I don't have words to sum up how great they are. The employees at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York City, I go to Basking Ridge because it's convenient for me. I don't need to go to New York City campus any longer. Basking Ridge is my place to be. The nurses, there's a nurse named Jamie who lives locally who maybe will be listening to your show. She goes out of her way to help me when I walk in the door. There's a young man named Patrick who's at my doctor's office who every time greets me with a smile. You know, hey, Jim, how are you today? And Patrick, you know, if I was so great, why would I be here? We laugh and we joke and we move forward. And it's that way from the people who work security that lets you in the building, to the young people who check you in, to when you're saying goodbye, to the people who are donating their time, walking around, say, if you want a ginger ale and a cracker. You know, everybody knows that they're there with one goal, and that's to help the person who's sitting in front of them. And they make you feel so important, so loved, that anything is possible. There's never a negative moment when I go to Sloan Kettering. You know, and there's people that break your heart that you see them suffering. I know, I said it. I have stage 4 cancer, right? And it's terminal cancer. You can't get any different words than that. But there's people I see that are suffering, and I want to reach out to them and help them because I'm not in as bad shape as they are. And Sloan Kettering is all about that. It's about love, hope, and it's about sharing the message. And if you follow them on Instagram or whatever the case may be, they're doing a Survivor series this week, and they're showing survivors, people who, you know, before and after at Sloan Kettering. It's so important. God bless Sloan Kettering. I don't know if I could say that more.
You know, Jim, I want to say God bless you. I would say that, you know, nurses are angels. The doctors are incredible, devoted folks there. Really, the entire healthcare industry with COVID-19, everything, they're really heroes. It's about time they're getting their just to. Before I end the show, Jim, I just want to say thank you so much again. God bless you and your family. I love your inner strength, your courage, your faith, your resiliency, and you're a winner in life. So keep up what you're doing, Jim DeSimone. You're a wonderful man, and I'm so much better to have this great opportunity to speak with you today. So please take care of yourself. For the listeners, this is going to be my last show on WMTR. I've enjoyed this ride for over 9+ months, having wonderful people on. I'm going to be making a much larger platform. I hope that you'll join me on the journey on the Todd Leonard Show. Visit our website, toddleonardshow.com. Visit us on Facebook, Todd Leonard Show Facebook page. Call my office, 973-920-7900, to keep in touch. We have a newsletter, So you can come on the website, toddleonardshow.com. We're going to have a much bigger platform where you can see me and the guests. We'll be able to share some more things with the listeners. And I just want to say thank you so much for each week tuning in. I really hope you join me on the next journey. I'm so excited about it. But God bless all of you. Enjoy the rest of today. Make each day a masterpiece. Take care of each other. Thank you again.